640 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. As the auto workers union strike against the big three is set to roll into a 12th day tomorrow, President Biden says he will head to Detroit to hit the picket line with auto workers. WWJTV's Ray Strickland says the strike could start impacting repair shops like Wetmore's in Ferndale, Michigan, where he spoke to the service manager.
Like much of the country, Wetmore's is paying close attention to the negotiations between the union and the automakers. Dave says he hopes they can reach a deal sooner rather than later.
Hopefully they can come to an agreement here real soon so we don't have to worry about this issue.
And Dave says the shop is good on supplies for now, but he says if this strike goes on for a few months or up to a year, that could all change.
It's a deal between Hollywood writers and the union studios, that is, but it's not a done deal. All of the details of the tentative contract have not been released, but sticking points included pay and artificial intelligence. Syracuse University TV and pop culture professor Robert Thompson.
Late night will probably be, along with daytime talk shows, the first thing back. There's talk now that they should be on the air by maybe the week of October 2nd, maybe the week of October 9th.
Some Lahaina residents are allowed to return to their properties, many for the first time since the Maui town was demolished by a wildfire over a month ago. Noreen Wales lost her home.
This is the first time I'm going to see it, so it's pretty bad.
The wildfire killed nearly 100 people and destroyed over 2,000 buildings. A government shutdown deadline is Saturday if Congress can't pass spending bills to prevent it. President Biden blames the holdup on some Republicans who want spending cuts, which he says would affect the black community and women and children. More from CBS's Weeja Jang.
He also put the blame squarely on the group of far-right Republicans who are holding out on funding the government because they want deep spending cuts. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has failed numerous times now to convince those lawmakers to compromise, a task that may be even tougher now that former President Donald Trump is urging conservatives to shut down the government if they don't get, quote, everything they want.
Days after being indicted on federal bribery and fraud charges, Democratic Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey says he will not resign.
All people are presumed innocent until proven guilty. All people. I ask for nothing more and deserve nothing less.
Menendez and his wife are scheduled to be arraigned in Manhattan on Wednesday morning. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Tensions are brewing among prominent Republicans in Waukesha County. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports the former County Republican Party chair, John Macy, has leveled accusations against current leadership, alleging improper coordination with a political action committee. Macy claims that payments were funneled to party leaders through the PAC and used to support advisors of Tim Michaels. While Macy's allegations raise concerns about potential campaign finance law violations, the accused party leadership dismisses the claims, characterizing the accusations as politically motivated. IndyCar will make a return to the Milwaukee Mile for the first time since 2015, with a race next Labor Day weekend. The Milwaukee Mile has a rich history in IndyCar racing dating back to 1939. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready.
It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So a video caught my attention the other day that, you know, every father, it's literally every father's nightmare to have their young daughter raped and impregnated by some dirtbag. And then to have our current law say, you know what? Sorry, your 10 or 11 or 12 year old daughter. Yeah, this horrible thing happened. This tragedy happened. But, you know, she's going to have to carry it to term. Sorry. That's just the law. There's nothing we can do. And, you know, as a father, I watched this video and it made me very angry, as I think every father, well, I think it should. And here to share some thoughts on the video, I've asked Joe Jacobson to come talk with us. Joe is the founder of Progress Action Fund. They're the folks behind this video, which we'll get out on social media. Also under the hashtag of MAGA is watching you. And look, you know, when these folks get their eye, remember, they want smaller, less intrusive government, except in your bedroom. Joe, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So this video has made the rounds. It's gone viral. It's gotten lots of attention, as it should. Tell me why. Why'd you make it?
Well, we think Republicans are extreme. And, you know, it needs to be called out. That's the first and foremost thing. But also, most political ads are kind of boring and pretty similar, as I'm sure you know. And based on our last ad we did, the Keep Republicans Out of Your Bedroom one, that went viral first, is on CNN, MSNBC, hell, even Fox News picked it up. We had a Republican congressman literally invade somebody's bedroom while they were trying to, you know, be intimate and get a condom, saying they banned birth control. So we thought we needed to make this ad, not only because reproductive rights is important, but also because, you know, I feel Democrats aren't communicating in a way that resonates with voters as much as it could be. And there's nothing quite like a congressman entering your bedroom or a congressman entering the doctor's office telling your daughter and your family what you can and cannot do.
Now, what's interesting to me is I shared that video with some of my red hat wearing acquaintances, and they all told me that that's not how it is. That, you know, that would never happen in this country. It could never happen. That's not what they're fighting for. Is it what they're fighting for?
I mean, I think Republican politicians are out of touch with the voters. And I'm glad to hear that your, you know, MAGA hat wearing friends are saying that. But I think we need to be looking at what the people who they're voting for are for. You know, you have people in Pennsylvania like Doug Mastriano, who ran for governor, who wants no exceptions for rape, incest, or life of the mother. You know, Dr. Oz, his famous quote from last cycle in Pennsylvania was, these decisions should be between, you know, a family, a doctor, and the local politician. And then you have Carolyn Carluccio. You know, we're running this ad for the upcoming Supreme Court race. And Carluccio, who is the Republican nominee, she is very pro-life. She even funds pro-life causes with her nonprofit. You know, that's her position as far as I'm concerned. So these Republican voters, you know, they, I think, would need to be reached out to by folks like us, because the politicians they're voting for just really don't have the same values that they do.
Do you see this as an opportunity to maybe educate some of the less ardent red hats, some of the more, maybe if there are any moderate Republicans, you know, people, you know, like me, who've got teenage daughters, who you go, you know, I don't want someone in that room making a decision, taking a choice away from her. Do you think, see this as an education opportunity, or is this just to rally the base?
Well, I really think it's both. I think you can do both, because this ad, you know, it's gone viral. It's had over 8 million views on Twitter in less than a week, which we're very excited about. So it's definitely a rallying cry for Democrats. We need to stand up for our values. But at the same time, you know, this is something Republican voters agree. You know, you mentioned your MAGA hat friends again, and, you know, they do not want this. So I really think it's a good education opportunity. But also, you know, this type of ads that we create, I think, you know, can be for persuasion, not just in Pennsylvania, but also in Ohio. You know, we really had strong victories in the August elections when we ran our Keep Republicans Out of Your Bedroom ad. And we saw 15 counties that voted for Trump in 2020 voted no, meaning that they wanted to protect reproductive rights back in August. So I think this is a great persuasion, turnout, and education opportunity.
No, and I agree with you, especially in a state like Pennsylvania, where we are very close. Then you know the turnout can be very close at times. This is one of those issues that make maybe get people thinking a little differently. Because look, you know, I know some Republicans who are like, look, I believe in, you know, being a little bit more conservative on fiscal issues, fairly a little bit socially liberal-ish, not, you know, too far. But this is one of those moving things where, you know, when I was talking to a friend, I said, look, you know, what happens if something happens to your daughter, even if it's not rape or incest, even if, you know, if she's 15 and something happens, do you want to force that that life choice on her? And he's like, no. And I said, then this is the issue you vote on.
Right. Yeah, I kind of agree with you more. I think, you know, as Democrats, we need to have this be our central campaign message. You know, voters go to the polls. They have a bunch of considerations. But, you know, we need to make this the key consideration. And that's what happened in 2022. And that's what's happened so far this year. Yeah. So I think Democrats, you know, we need to be running on this. We need to be hitting, you know, Republicans on this consistently, starting now, you know, 2023 and then to the elections, because this is what voters believe. Voters, you know, Republicans as well. It's like 2/3 of Americans believe in making Roe v. Wade law of the land again. So we need to run on this message. We need to win. And then we need to keep our promise and make Roe v. Wade law of the land, because Republicans don't want that. That's out of touch with the voters want. Democrats, like our organization and candidates, they want Roe v. Wade to be the law of the land again.
Now, the bigger issue here for me, you know, now this is a big issue, especially your ad. The bigger issue for me here, Joe, is the fact that Republicans have taken that freedom angle. They've said they're the party of freedom. This is a freedom issue. You know, things people do in their bedroom, a freedom issue, who you love and who you spend your life with, a freedom issue. You know, down the line, you know, Democrats don't do enough of talking about the big picture. We focus on the details, and we focus on, you know, on telling you these big, long worded stories. This is really, really about freedom and individual liberty.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have, you know, Democrat politicians really trying to embrace the freedom angle. You know, people like Gavin Newsom, people like President Biden. I really think it's important, you know, Governor Shapiro, Bob Casey, you know, people like that really trying to hammer that message. And I think more Democrats could learn from things like that. As far as I'm concerned, this is the key message going into 2024, but it's also the privacy angle as well. You know, they do not want, or voters do not want, politicians of any party, but in this case, it's Republicans, because they are very out of touch with voters, invading their personal lives. You mentioned marriage, for example. You know, we're going to be producing sequels to our, you know, Keep Republicans Out of Your Bedroom, you know, Stop Republicans from Watching Your Daughter. One place we do not want a Republican congressman who's very extreme, you know, Scott Perry or anybody, for example, in Pennsylvania, would be at a same-sex wedding. You know, we should not be telling people who they can and cannot marry. But then you had a majority of the Republican congressional delegation across the country, you know, vote against, you know, making same-sex marriage and codifying it into law of the land. So as far as I'm concerned, we need to be highlighting these freedom issues because that's what voters really do care about.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting that you bring up my congressman, Scott, pardon me, don't look at my cell phone, Perry, because he is one of the more extreme. In fact, he's one of the people driving the potential government shutdown, which is why I'm hopeful that the good people of Pennsylvania or of the 10th district where I'm at look at Eugene DePasquale, who has been a good public servant here in Pennsylvania for a very long time. So the hope is that that we send Perry back where he belongs, just aside from our conversation, because ultimately we've got to get rid of some of the crazy in Congress because things clearly not getting done.
Yeah, absolutely. I think democracy, you know, these abortion rights issues, you know, you have this gerrymandering going on in Wisconsin. You have it going on in so many different states. And Scott Perry, you know, very involved in January 6th. And all these issues are related. You know, the American people are very clear that they want reproductive freedom and they don't want Republican politicians invading their bedrooms, invading their personal lives, invading their doctor's offices, telling them what they can and cannot do. But, you know, if Republicans have gerrymandered things so badly and are trying to overthrow our democracy, then it doesn't really matter what voters want because it won't be a democracy. So I think we need to walk and chew gum at the same time and be on that message as far as the Democratic Party goes.
Now I'm right there with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Joe Jacobson. He's the founder of Progress Action Fund. You can check out their website, progressactionfund.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Also see the videos that we've been talking about. And look, I'd love to hear what you've got to say on that. Now, I got to get your thoughts on this most recent ABC Washington Post poll, where the blaring headline, Trump edges out Biden 51-42 in head-to-head matchup. 51-42 is not edging out. I don't know who wrote that idiotic headline. But are you concerned that what we're talking about, what you're pushing out, isn't resonating with folks when they're looking at that matchup?
Yeah, I mean, those numbers are definitely not where we would want them to be. However, I would say that, you know, it's still very early and that we shouldn't just look at one poll. You know, the aggregate polls, there's a bunch that have been very close. So I think let's wait for more data to come in before we start sounding the red alarm. I think a big factor for Democrats was back in 2022 or in 2022 was that you had voters who didn't approve of the president. An independence break for the president, despite not approving of him. And that's because Republicans are so extreme. I think President Biden has a great record, you know, whether that's infrastructure, whether that's climate change, whether that's jobs or healthcare. You know, I think he has a great record, and I think they need to start spending a whole bunch of money to make sure voters know just how great his record is. As far as our organization goes, I'm not concerned because Republicans are just so extreme that, you know, maybe somebody doesn't love the president. But at the same time, they're never going to vote for somebody like, you know, Doug Mastriano or Marjorie Taylor Greene, who are now the quintessential Republican. They're not even extreme for a Republican anymore. And I think Biden's quote is pretty on point. You know, don't compare me to the almighty, compare me to the alternative. And certainly Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, and all these, you know, extremist MAGA Republicans. I'm not worried about the poll because voters are going to see what's going on coming up next year for sure.
My problem with all these polls is they're all BS. I think you can rig them all to say whatever you want to keep a horse race going so you get people continually clicking through to make money and make this a horse race. I don't know what the ultimate end point's going to be. I can guarantee one thing. It is not going to be 51-42.
No, there's no way. I mean, last cycle, you know, polls on aggregate, from my understanding, weren't terrible. But then you go into some of these races, you know, New Mexico's second or Ohio's first. And just the polling there was just so variable. You know, you have a lot of different entities and organizations and media outlets, you know, used to be conducting a lot more polls, but they just kind of stopped doing the abundance that they used to. So now it's just so hard to tell. So I think, you know, when you have one or two polls, it's kind of just like, you know, throwing you-know-what at the wall and hoping it stands out. So I think we'll know much more next year. But given the electoral success of Democrats all across the country, 538, they recently had an article highlighting how well Democrats have done in dozens of special elections. So like you were talking about, you know, you can kind of cherry pick the data to make the case that you want.
Yeah. The website, progressactionfund.com. Take a look at it. We'll get links out on social media. Joe Jacobson, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Good video. I'm looking forward to the next one. Keep up the great work. I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you, Rick. Really appreciate you.
Thanks so much, Joe. Appreciate it again. progressactionfund.org.com, the website. We'll get links out on social media. Gonna take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, some of the Republicans in Tennessee are, they're putting together a study group. They're putting down another group to say, you know what, we're going to not take any federal money for education. In fact, they're looking at turning down, what was it, some $1.9 billion in federal education funding. And they're figuring out, hey, well, what would happen if we got all that? You know, we could cut all that science and art and music and math, and we cut all that stuff. We just do history, you know, good Republican. You know, Prager University, Hillsdale College history. That's what we could give the kids. Good brainwashing propaganda. And it's cheap. Now, me personally, I say, you know, being from Pennsylvania, you know, we could always increase funding. If they don't want the $1.9 billion, I know Pennsylvania would be happy to take it. Could help with education funding, especially in poverty-ridden areas, could give us a leg up in the competition to educate the future, get better jobs, all of that stuff. But it got me to thinking. It got me to thinking, you know, what would they cut? You know, how much could be gutted from education? And then I came across this story from Donovan Elementary School of the Lebanon City School District in Ohio, who evidently, you know, last Friday they thought it'd be a great idea to have Ice Cream Friday. And who in their right mind would be against Ice Cream Friday at whatever age? But these are third and fourth graders who, you know, clearly looking forward to ice cream on Friday. And as a kid going, oh my God, ice cream on Friday, that's going to be great. I can't wait for it. All your friends talking about, we're going to have ice cream on Friday. It's going to be fabulous. Can't wait. And then the Donovan Elementary School puts out on social media this gem of a post. Tomorrow is the highly anticipated first Ice Cream Friday. We wanted to send out a few reminders to hopefully make the day go smoothly for everyone. A student, here's the kicker, here it comes. You ready for it? A student must have money on their account to purchase ice cream. If a student has a negative balance, they will not be able to purchase ice cream, even if they bring their $1 for ice cream. Students are only allowed to purchase one ice cream and are not permitted to buy ice cream for a friend. We hope to have this. We have to have a great first Ice Cream Friday. Really? This? Now, this story has, you know, from the media perspective, a happy ending. because that's how I found this. Oh, this is such a good feel-good story. Oh, this is wonderful. Some people in the community saw the post and reached out to the school and paid, you know, for all of the back debt, the debtor children, those third and fourth grader debtors, and gave an extra $5,000 so that kids would be able to have a little bit in the future so that they wouldn't go far into debt. Such a good feel-good story. And look, completely the wrong message. Good on the people for doing it, because I'll be honest with you. When I read the post, I'm going, you know, how much could it possibly cost to ensure that all kids got the ice cream? How about if I just buy the ice cream and say, give it out? Ice Cream Friday is a giveaway thing. Now, good on the people who step forward. You know, give them credit. Good citizens. Love people like that. But the message is that we need good Samaritans to come in to save the day. Otherwise, children are going to be used as pawns in this. Imagine being a third grader. I mean, this is, and I've got some experience with this. But imagine being a third, fourth grader and being in debt. I mean, you go, wow, how's that? Well, we're teaching kids about the economy, especially poor ones, that your life is going to be a lifetime of debt, that a lifetime of struggle, a lifetime of being denied things because of the station in life that you were born into, because of the fact that you don't have enough money in your pocket to be able to buy ice cream on Friday, even if you can come up with the dollar. Because they're going to hold it against you that you didn't have the dollar, sorry. And we know what this was. This was a way to get people, parents, to cough up the money. Okay, well, the kids are behind. We don't want the kids to be left out. We don't want them to feel bad. Every parent thinks this way, rich or poor. But what about the parents who can't? And I think back to my mother. We didn't have money for things like this. The school used to have a carnival in the gym, you know, a nickel to play a game. We didn't have it. I had friends who would take me around and let me play for them because I was one heck of a pitcher. And I won people all kinds of stuff. Not for me, but for them. So I did get to play. This takes that away. Sorry, even if you got a friend who's got the extra buck, sorry, we're not going to let the friend do it. We're not going to let your friend be a good friend. Think about all of the messaging that comes out of this. Now, the school, after it became apparent that this was a terrible idea and that everyone was ticked off about it, they tried to say, no, 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 this is how it's done. You know, this has been our policy. You know, ice cream's an a la carte thing. You know, it's something you can buy, you know, not from the regular meal, that we don't turn kids away from the regular meal. You just can't buy the extra stuff. But this isn't that. This isn't the kid deciding one day, hey, I want ice cream. This is the school district going, hey, it's Friday. Ice cream on Friday for everybody. Except you, you, and you. And this is my problem with where we are as a society. I'm telling you. You did this to my kid, I'd be fit to be tied. Only because I remember what it was like. I remember the humiliation. Why do we shame and humiliate kids? Because their parents don't have the resources. And I know, I can hear people go, you know, it's only a couple of bucks. No, no. School lunches are not cheap. Every day, $3-4 every day. And if you're making minimum wage, if you're making $10 an hour, I'm sorry, but $3 a day, $15 a week, $60 a month, that's a lot of money for a low-income family. And it's easy to fall behind. And then that number builds. And then the harassment starts. My daughter's too lazy to take money in every once in a while. So on Sunday, we get the call. Your daughter is delinquent. Seven cents. Your daughter is delinquent a dollar. And it keeps coming every Sunday. It reminds me of growing up in the Catholic Church, where on Monday the phone would ring and the person at the rectory would ask my mother why there was no money in the envelope in the collection plate. Because we didn't have any, was the answer. But we had to put the envelope in to prove attendance. It's the kind of place I went to. This kind of financial shaming, we've got to be better. It does terrible things to kids. And to have a school district whose main goal is to educate children do something like this is despicable. And I'm sorry, you don't get the fallback on, well, you know, it's an a la carte item. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Have you ever had anything like that happen in your life? Has there been a moment that you remember? And should we, as a society, just stop? You know, good on Michigan. They're talking about ending this nonsense. Gonna take a quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1961. That was the day when Herbert Lee was murdered just outside of Liberty, Mississippi. He was a successful black cotton farmer who became active in efforts to register black voters. Lee had 9 children. He was one of the few area black farmers with a vehicle. This made him very valuable to the voter registration movement. Lee would drive Bob Moses from the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee around Amet County to reach unregistered voters. It was dangerous work to register black sharecroppers and farmers in rural Mississippi. Attempts by black residents to gain legal or economic equality were met with threats and violence. On the morning of his murder, Lee had come to the Westbrook Cotton Gin just outside of Liberty to drop off a truckload of cotton. There, he was met by a childhood friend, Mississippi State Representative E.H. Hurst. Hurst came up to the truck and started shouting at Lee. Then he took out a gun and shot Herbert Lee in the head. Witnesses stated that Lee had brandished a tire iron at Hurst. Hurst claimed self-defense. A jury declared the murder was justifiable homicide. Lewis Allen, a black farmer and timber worker, was one who had testified about witnessing the shooting. Later, he recanted his testimony, saying that he had lied about Lee threatening Hurst because he feared for his life. After Allen began to talk about what he actually saw that day, he became the victim of harassment and beatings. Finally, on January 31st, 1964, he too was gunned down in his driveway. No one was ever convicted or even arrested for his murder.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Oklahoma troubadour Woody Guthrie wrote a song about outlaws that was right on target. As through this world I've traveled, I've seen lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a 6-gun and some with a fountain pen. That could apply today to Clayton Bennett, a multimillionaire Oklahoma City banker who has regularly wielded his fountain pen to loot public funds for his private gain. Bennett is a Hall of Infamy player in the elite club of big league owners of pro basketball teams, specializing in picking taxpayers' pockets to finance his operations. In 2006, he and a few high-rolling partners bought the Seattle Supersonics team, promptly demanding that locals pony up $500 million to build a new arena for them. No, said Seattle. So Bennett and gang scampered off to Oklahoma City with the team, renaming it the Thunder. Then, they used their fountain pens to filch a $215 million subsidy from local officials. Gratitude? Robbers don't say thank you. They refill their fountain pens. As Judd Legum reports in his excellent Substack report, Popular Information, Bennett is now demanding $850 million from Oklahoma City taxpayers to build a glittery new basketball palace for him. Legum notes that this is about $3,200 for every Oklahoma City household, and that Bennett's take will deplete the budgets of about a dozen essential community projects. He also has an inside accomplice, the mayor. Having taken Bennett cash to get elected, Mayor David Holt is now warning taxpayers to hand over millions to his rich banker buddy, or the thunder will leave town. This is Jim Hightower saying, so go! The thieving won't stop until the people stop the thieves. Boom, 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 ship the whole herd of thundering thieves out of town, including Bennett and that pusillanimous mayor.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, going back in the way, way back machine, today in Trump, the year was 2019, and it's the day that the transcript for the perfect phone call was released. Yeah, you remember the perfect phone call, the one said, hey, give me some dirt on Biden, which, interestingly enough, you know, fast forward to, you know, 4 years, and we are now opening an impeachment inquiry into, well, the perfect phone calls beg for anything, information on anything, just whatever we can find. Yeah. Big fun. Big fun. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, the impending government shutdown, maybe a little bit on Bob Menendez refusing to step down. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So today was the day of the release of the transcript of the perfect phone call. Do you remember where you were when the transcripts were unfurled?
Yes, I remember exactly. I was in Belair, Ohio. I remember exactly where I was.
There you go. And thoughts?
Yes.
Thoughts on the perfect phone call transcripts?
Well, it's kind of interesting because this is weird. I just was thinking about this. Okay, we had the perfect phone call to Trump. Trump wanted dirt. Now that you're right, the Congress is looking into the Hunter Biden Ukraine thing. Zelensky's still there, but the difference is now we're involved with a war, funding a war. Kind of been like the Ukraine thing, huh?
Yeah. No, I had someone tell me today it's Ukraine's fault that we're going to have a government shutdown. It's not that the Kook caucus is, you know, trying to get their pound of flesh. It's all about Ukraine.
Well, they'll stretch that. It's not about Ukraine. It's about abortion and Senator Tuberville. If it's not about that, it's about shutting down the education department. If it's not about that, and on and on and on, because they're trying to decide every philosophical moment in budget bills.
Any tomorrow the speaker and the House is coming back into session. Any predictions? You're usually a good crystal ball into what the fun and entertainment's going to be. What are you expecting over the next couple of days as we tick down to the end of the month?
Well, this one's strange because you know, Speaker McCarthy gave away everything to become speaker when he did the motion to vacate Matt Gaetz.
Yep.
Blackmails him with that, and et cetera, et cetera. McCarthy doesn't want to shut down. McConnell doesn't want to shut down, either one of them. But here's the twist to it. What McCarthy didn't do was the 11 appropriation bills, which he said he would do. Now, catch 22, he couldn't do the 11 appropriation bills because nothing's correct with about 12 of the 20 Freedom Caucus people. So he was stuck there. Although McCarthy should have just said, okay, too bad, here's what we're doing, vote up or down on the 11 bills. I'm suspicioning, this is a suspicion here, he's going to get some kind of short-term, two-week deal promising something, not to Gaetz, because no matter what he does with Gaetz, it doesn't work, but promising something to some of the Freedom Caucus members, or promising to continue to try to do the 11 appropriation bills, which is a legitimate complaint for some of the members. I think that's the direction it may go.
Yeah, but I'm looking at
now,
McCarthy.
The only thing,
go ahead.
The only thing that could change that would be wonderful for the system, and I know for a fact this is being done, for a fact, is the private reach out between Republicans and Democrats coming together. Now, because the Republicans control the chamber, and it was this way when I was there, Rick, the Democrats, rightfully and wisely so, are going to say, okay, if you want to do a deal, you've got to provide the majority of the votes. So if you need 217 votes, let's say that the Republicans have to provide 180, and then the Democrats provide 38 votes. that deal could happen if they come to a compromise on, you know, something agreeable to continue the budget, let's say past Christmas, probably. That kind of deal bipartisanly could occur, which would probably be healthy for the system.
No, this is where I was going to go. This is where I was going to say, in any functional democracy with any leader, you know, you don't even have to be a profile encouraged leader. You just have to be someone who's, you know, moderately functional, you know, go and do this stuff and make those 15, 20, whatever you need, make them irrelevant. And then use your power to try and get them out. That's how a functional system would work.
Exactly. Plus, at some point in time, McCarthy has to realize this trajectory path he is on leads to nowhere. It leads to John Boehner. Just bring up the past. Remember, John was going to be thrown out on a rail there. It leads to John Boehner. I stood there and watched Newt in private caucuses say, it's a democracy. We're going to have a vote. If you don't like me, remove me. I'll leave. You know, at some point in time, you have to stand up and say those things that you're not afraid. And if McCarthy doesn't do that, eventually he will be whittled down to the point where there will be a motion to vacate. Now, AOC the other day made an interesting statement, and that is, you know, McCarthy hasn't done much. Maybe they would support the motion to vacate. Well, either way, the Democrats could support it or not support it. Either way, it doesn't help McCarthy, no matter what's going down. So if I were McCarthy, I would just make some kind of, you know, temporary deal, which he'll probably do, continue to try to do the appropriation bills and then throw them out amongst the general population. But in order to do that, for him to bypass the 12 problems, he has to have support from the Democrat side, period.
But that means you don't get to cut Social Security. That means you don't get to cut Medicare. That means you don't get to do some of the really ugly things that the Kook caucus wants.
Sure. And here's where he can benefit, too. McCarthy can say, look, we're not going to cut Social Security. We're not going to cut Medicare. We will bipartisanly and with the interest groups, AARP, et cetera, we will look at how to firm Medicare and Social Security up. We'll look at it together. Great. Stops the controversy. They actually technically do look at, Lord forbid, public policy considerations, you know, to make sure it's around. I mean, there's a lot of great things it could do that no matter how much, I keep saying the 12 because it's not 20 anymore, but no matter how much the 12 complain, McCarthy would be, you know, in good position,
yeah.
Period. Now, that means, though, that, you know, it's not down the line, we do everything with Republican votes. He can't do everything with Republican votes because he has people that want to be superstars like Matt Gaetz and run for governor, et cetera, that are going to stop every single thing he wants to do.
Oh, you didn't just say that. You didn't just say Matt Gaetz.
Oh, yeah.
For governor. Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, isn't that one way to maybe get rid of him?
and make things worse? No, but here's the thing. No, actually, now that I'm starting to think about it, Florida man as the head of Florida, yeah, sure, why not? What the heck? You know, Florida's a giant show anyway, so.
You know?
All right, well, there you go.
Maybe.
There you go. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst extraordinaire. I want to get your thoughts on this Menendez thing. He said that the envelopes that were full of cash, you know, the $480,000, you know, and the money had stashed all over the place, it was for emergencies. He said that now this may seem old-fashioned, but these were monies drawn from my personal savings account based on the income that I have lawfully derived over those 30 years. And it's, you know, it's just safety blanket. Now, I do love John Fetterman's tweet on this. He said, we've got an extra flashlight in our home for emergencies. Thought that was perfect.
Well, I mean, look, if Carol's car breaks down, don't you have to have 20K somewhere to take it to the local Pennsylvania, you know, mechanic?
If I had an EV right now, probably. But no, I don't have that kind of money laying around the house, Bob.
No, don't you need that to get the brake line fixed for an emergency? I mean, you know, Menendez, when he... If he just said, I'm going to fight this, I'm innocent, you know, you sit there, okay, there's a court system, doesn't look good. When he came up with this and that he basically came from a Cuban family where you had to, you know, store this cash in case the government, you know, something happened with the government. Hey, I understand our government's a little shaky here and there, but, you know, not to the point where they're gonna come in and take your money. So his answer was just basically obviously ridiculous. And he would have been better just to say, I'm going to fight this, you know, instead of try. You don't, you know, when you answer these things, been there, done it, you either answer them all, you don't specific, because he didn't answer Egypt, but he answered the cash.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Now, what I find amazing is that he would go here to the emergency angle, knowing that 44% of Americans can't afford a $1,000 emergency. Right. And he could afford 480 of those.
Right. I mean, all the way around, this isn't looking good. Like I said, I've been in the jackpot seat. I was fortunate. I did not have, when the whole thing began with me, I did not have, including Nancy Pelosi, I did not have people saying, you need to leave now. I didn't have that happening. What has happened with Menendez, and this is what happened, you know, it's selective who is told to leave, and some people fight it, and, you know, some leave. This situation with him, let's face it, is really, really ugly.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where people are not going to give him a benefit of the doubt on it.
No, and look, I said the last time we talked, he should just become a Republican, because they'd never ask him to resign. Now you've got Fetterman, who was the first person. Sherrod Brown came out, was the second, and also Peter Welch of Vermont, the third. I expect those calls to get, you know, louder and louder down the road. But he's defiantly saying, nope, not going to do it.
Yeah, this one's tough, because the government, when they charge him with bribery and don't try to do a broad brush charge, which, you know, I had the honest services fraud, which is now unconstitutional if you can't link bribery. They're linking bribery. Because if he says that came out of his account, right there, number one, where's the track record? If it did, he will have withdrawals. If he doesn't have withdrawals on record, guess what? That's problem number one.
But, Bob, he was just shaving change, man. You know, the Big Mac cost, $5.50, that extra 50 cents in the pot.
You know, me, you, and if we both picked 10 friends on that we each know, we couldn't save that kind of cash in 35 years, you know?
This is true. I got to get your thoughts on Donald Trump's truth that he put out. He said, Mark Milley, who led perhaps the most embarrassing moment in American history, with his grossly incompetent implementation of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, costing many lives, leaving behind hundreds of American citizens, and handing over billions of dollars of the finest military equipment ever made. We'll be leaving the military next week. This will be a time for all citizens of the U.S. to celebrate. This guy turned out to be a woke train wreck who, if the fake news reporting is correct, was actually dealing with China to give them a heads up on the thinking of the President of the United States. This is an act of so egregious that in times gone by, the punishment would have been death. A war between China and the United States could have been the result of this treasonous act. To be continued. Is he suggesting putting his old general to death, you know, kind of North Korea style? Is that what we're getting?
What? It's interesting. Gosar from Arizona, Congressman Gosar, he ended up making a statement that made Trump look okay, if that's possible. I mean, Gosar's statements were beyond out of control. So all of a sudden, he actually made Trump look like, well, I'm just inferring, you know, years ago in the 1800s, this would have happened. Trump's logic doesn't make sense because of the fact that what the general did was to basically say to China, with the upheaval and all the rumors that were running around, he simply wanted to de-escalate any situation. And his message was very easy in his own quote: stay calm, stay steady, de-escalate, we're not going to attack you. That's not an act of treason. That's an act of trying to stop the rumors, because you know what was going on with information back and forth, rumors that, you know, that Trump was going to do anything humanly possible, And even though this wasn't a China-U.S. issue, things escalate to the point where everybody gets nervous. So that's all that the general did. We weren't at war with China. He wasn't giving them information or doing something he shouldn't. But, this death thing, where do they come up with this stuff at?
Well, no, look, you know, my son has a friend who, you know, he's all pro-death penalty, all these people, we should be putting them all to death. Yeah. And it's, you know, that's an undercurrent of what we are hearing from the Red Hat crowd. You know, if you're with us, you're against us. And if you're against us, we got to take you out.
I love how Trump says all of these people, all of them are idiots. And these are all the people he appointed. I mean, I love it.
No, they're the very best people, the very best idiots, though.
They were the very best, the best you could find on planet Earth, the most perfect phone calls, the most perfect people, and now they're the most all perfect idiots.
And speaking of perfect idiot, Ron DeSantis back in the news. Evidently, Sean Hannity is going to moderate a debate between Ron DeSantis and Gavin Newsom. Why?
Well, the speculation. Well, first of all, if I were Hannity, I would, because I didn't even know DeSantis was still in the race.
I didn't know he was ever in it.
Yeah, I follow the news. You know, if I were Hannity, I would moderate between Gavin Newsom and Nikki Haley, is what I would do.
Yes.
Honestly, if I'm going to do that kind of, you know, cheeky thing there, you know, cutesy thing, I would do it between Haley and Newsom. Really excite both sides, you know.
Yeah, but you're not
something legitimate because DeSantis
not get
could
Haley,
not beat
the two DeSantis and Haley. DeSantis would never do it. She would mop the floor with him.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that Newsom and Haley would be great.
No, you know? I agree.
Oh,
Newsom and
Haley. I mean DeSantis is done.
Okay. Yeah. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I used to like Newsom until today, when he on Friday he vetoed AB 316, the automated truck bill. I'm very unhappy about that at the moment.
Why do you think he did that?
His claim is that there's already regulation in place to oversee the automated vehicles, the automated trucks. You know, I'm being told no, there's not. Originally, my thought was he vetoed it because it wasn't enough. It was a very watered down compromise bill. As it was, look, it still allows automated vehicles on the road. It just says, hey, you got to have someone at the controls for when it breaks down. Because if you look at what's going on with the taxis in San Francisco, not putting a lot of confidence out there as to these automated vehicles being able to run. So I'm a little miffed at it right now, but we'll see.
You add the word truck, it's automated truck terrifies me.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't scare me, it terrifies me.
As it should. You know, as I said earlier, right. I went to a Guardians game over the weekend, and we're sitting in a stadium full of about 15,000, 18,000 people in the heart of downtown Cleveland, where you would think you'd get good cell phone reception. I got nothing. I could search nothing on the internet. I could text nothing. I could check no social media. Not that you want to, but I wanted to look up a couple of stats and stuff. Couldn't do it because there were too many people on the system. Now you're going to tell me rush hour traffic isn't going to put a lot of people on the system and you're not going to have buffering and problems with 80,000-pound vehicles? It's a dumb thing. He should have signed it. And if someone gets killed because of it, it's on him. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Right.
Finally, got to get your thought on the fact that a big majority, 65% of Americans, say that they want a popular presidential vote. Do we keep the current electoral system? Do we move to a popular vote, which almost two-thirds want? What do you think?
This is a tough one. I mean, I really went back and forth on this when I was in Congress about, you know, the popular vote, yet the Electoral College was designed, well, for what the Electoral College was designed for, it doesn't count anymore, okay? Because it was designed for the wee tiny ones to make a difference. Now it's going to make a difference Electoral College-wise, depends on which state. You know, yeah. 2016 was, you know, Pennsylvania, Ohio, our states, Michigan, Wisconsin. The original decision was so little states would have a lot of power to enter the union. So I'm tending to go towards, I guess, if I had to, a popular vote. I just don't think that the Electoral College will be done away with. We're always going to have this system where you've got to count the popular vote, and then you've got to target states.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is the more you have the popular vote losing the election, the more you have a president who doesn't have the majority of people on his side. I think the worse that gets, and I don't think we're there yet, but I think we're getting there.
One day we will, because you could have an overwhelming popular vote. I mean, really overwhelming, and yet the electoral system depends on the state where they come in at, and where the overwhelming vote is. The overwhelming vote could be in one state, which then you only get so many electoral votes, no matter if you take 90% of the vote in that state or not. So yes, it's not ripe yet. At some point in time, it will be. But yeah, I've went back and forth on it, but we've been ingrained with this idea of the Electoral College. But again, Electoral College doesn't function today as it was intended to function back then, which was the power of the littlest states.
Yeah, I'm also in favor of doing something with the Senate. I'm sorry that Montana and Wyoming shouldn't have the same power as California and Pennsylvania.
Well, the Senate
just saying
me, because I've heard it from McConnell, we've heard it from Dole, we've heard it from Schumer, whoever you want, the nuclear option. While you brave souls, you're daring to go to actual majority instead of 60. Wow. Aren't they courageous?
They are.
It amazes me.
They're right there. When it suits them, they're courageous.
Right. Right. Well, maybe if more of them wear shorts, they'll get a little bit brazen.
There you go. Bob, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff, my friend.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks so much, our good friend Bob Nate. I mean, at some point, I think we're going to hit that. What, Trump lost by 7 million votes. And I know, I've got friends who, no, they were stuffing ballots with old people. They were getting old people to vote. And, people were dropping off 10 ballots, for them and their 9 friends, which, is not right. It's not legal in a lot of states, which is a dumb rule, I think. I got to be honest. Because even if when they dropped off 10 or 15 of them, they still were legitimate ballots, still somebody's name on it, still someone married up to the registration, but da-da-da-da, can't have that. Cannot have that. Finally, this evening, for some reason, in the last week, I have talked about Taylor Swift more than I have talked about Taylor Swift in my entire life. I have said the words Taylor Swift back-to-back more than I have said those words back-to-back in my entire lifetime. But I got to tell you, I like her actions. And, here's the thing. The right is going after her in a huge way, attacking her. And Sunday was the big attack. And why, you may ask? Why? Poor Taylor Swift, wholesome young woman, good musician, popular with a lot of the people who like her music, all that. Well, they're mad because she went to a football game to watch her boyfriend. And she promoted voter registration. I know, cardinal sins, but that's what they're ticked off about. This Clay Travis guy tweeted out Travis Kelce, who is Taylor Swift's boyfriend, I guess, says, is doing Bud Light and COVID shot commercials. He needs to fire all his marketing agents, or he just needs to go ahead and cut off his... He uses the D word, become a chick and endorse Joe Biden. And then the following the comments after, calling him a simp, this Travis Kelce, calling him, all kinds of, beta, all kinds of stuff. And my challenge in this, from Clay Travis on down, walk up, get out from behind your screen, get out from behind the security of your basements, and go say any of those things to Travis Kelce, who I despise, by the way, because he plays for the Kansas City Chiefs. But he's a heck of a football player and someone I would not want to cross with. So go say those nice things to him. And, you know, calling him a simp and calling him a beta, I guess all words for less than manly, if you want to throw that in there, to a guy who's going home with Taylor Swift, to a guy who caught a touchdown pass during a football game, who's literally nuts. it's quite remarkable for me to listen to the keyboard warriors attack these two. Quite remarkable. So good on Taylor Swift. Got to tell you, I'm thrilled to say those two words back to back. And in fact, a bunch of people saying Taylor Swift for president. I am not there, but you know, we could probably do worse. You know, Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Chris Christie, Vivek Ramaswamy, yeah, and the rest of the cabal of crazy on that side. But good on her. Thanks, bud.
You're listening to The Shah.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.